to imagine all life as you know it stopping instantaneously and every molecule in your body exploding at the speed of light.
Total photonic reversal.
Photonic reversal.
Photonic reversal with your host, Conan Neutron. Broadcasting from a secret underground lair in Milwaukee, Wisconsin.
A gigantic middle finger to everything that is rotten about music, rock and roll, and corporate power.
The thing is, though, if you don't laugh, you're going to go on a killing spree with sharp and nails.
Confidence of a hero or a fool, I wasn't exactly certain which.
Could not be more professional.
It means something.
And they got away.
You know, that's my take on it. What's yours?
Protonic reversal!
That's like a science thing, right?
Indeed, it is. It is a science thing. It is a science place. It is a scientific fact that we are all up in your face. It is time once again for the one, the only Protonic Reversal. Welcome to it. That's right. We got returning guest Mike Baghetta tonight. Mere moments. But this, of course, is the first Protonic post-Catterall 2026. It went great. Thanks for asking. If you were there, you know. If you weren't, maybe you saw the live stream. And if not, it's still up there for all to see, which is just lovely. But, of course, this is episode 459, and I'm very excited to bring Baghetta back in a moment. Before we do that, though, welcome to Conan Neutron's Protonic Reversal. I'm your host, Conan Neutron. I'm a rock and roll lifer that has been touring and recording for over 26 years, most known for the band Conan Neutron, The Secret Friends. Music is a huge part of my life, and use the format of this very long-running podcast to talk about music with musicians whose work I enjoy and respect, but who may not be household names. This is episode 459. Now, if this is your first time listening to the show, archives of it are available for free. No ads, no sponsors, no kidding at protonicreversal.com. However, if you want to support the show and get episodes sooner, $1 a month at patreon.com/protonicreversal will achieve that goal. And if you like the show, even just a single episode, please feel free to like, subscribe on your platform of choice, share it around on the internet, even leave a review. All that helps people discover the show, it beats back the almighty algorithmic overlords, and it's just a darn nice thing to do. All right, so Mike Baghetta is back. The not-so-secret shredder. He's got some new music, he's got some tours, he's got a lot of stuff going on. Without any further ado, let's talk about it. Baghetta, welcome back.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Yeah, so this is exciting. You've got, so there's new stuff, and there's new stuff happening as well, right?
There's new stuff, and there's stuff that that I haven't told anybody about.
You're breaking news on this very show, which I appreciate. Casa Sueño. Is it Sueño? Is that how you say it, Sueño?
I think it's Sueño.
Sueño. Sueño.
With the little,
I grew up in California. I think I'd have a good accent for it, but I don't. Sorry. Let's start with that. Let's start with the breaking news. Explain to me this
okay.
new outfit.
This is the, okay? Wow, the right into the secret thing.
Yeah, yeah, just, I mean, like, look, man, I ain't got time. We're all getting older here.
Well, there's a new band. There's a new band that I'm sort of helming called Casa Sueño. It's me. Our friend Mike Watt is playing bass. And
who just played Catterall, played a wonderful set of
Catterall. Yeah. I actually didn't know there was a live stream for the whole festival, so I am going to go check it out.
You can see it. And there's going to be produced videos kind of coming out later.
And Steve from Kansas City played there, I think, too, right?
Season of Risk, they played the same night they were, by the way, I think the best time I ever saw them. Although
clocks,
I did to see them last night.
Watches. I always call them clocks.
Clocks, whatever. Yeah.
They're great.
They're great.
They played with us somewhere a long time ago. Anyways.
Watt's in it, you're in it, and ...
Yeah, and a drummer named John Herndon, who a lot of people probably know from Tortoise, but he also had this great Isotope 217 group, and actually an amazing artist, and just a very cool guy to hang out with, improviser. You know, I learned a lot about electronic music from him, just hanging out like a little bit. He knows so much different music that he's told me about. He's a great guy. So we're really excited to explore some new music with this group.
Yeah, great drummer, very versatile. He played in Poster Children for a while.
Yes. You know,
as Johnny Machine, right?
Yep.
And that's a true heads know from that. He also has an insane story about trying out for the Red Hot Chili Peppers, which is
I've heard I've drag a him story, on the show. I haven't asked him, but I do know that there might be a story,
which is stunning on multiple levels if you really stop to think about it. But yeah, no, this is very exciting. So how did this band come together? Which again is different from the records that you've done with Watt and Keltner, and it's different from MSSV.
I know that this is gonna kind of bite me and confuse a lot of people, because the records that me and Mike did with Jim Keltner are like a separate musical thing, and then we did MSSV where Stephen Hodges played drums. And we'll probably talk about the new record that just came out for that in a second.
Guarantee you, we will.
And a lot of people think that MSSV is like because Keltner couldn't tour, but it's not. That's not really what happened. It was just we did a tour and Steven played drums and I wanted to write new music for those guys. And they said yes. And then this is just sort of, we've done four full lengths with MSSV.
Yeah.
We've done a lot of touring. I think I did count at the end of the last tour. I think it's something like 207 gigs or something like that. And when it came time to do something, when you put out a new record, usually the thing is you do a tour with it. And another thing you usually do that a lot of people do now is you can pre-save a track, or like you can pre-save an album, and then there's the pre-release, and then there's the pre-release thing, you know, and it's just like, in a way, a lot of it's just like too much.
It's a lot of internet
for me.
Yeah, I mean, dude, it's like this show is on the internet. It's a lot of internet for me too. I'm you know, whatever.
So there was.
Went back to listen to my local music library. I ditched all the streamers. So I'm like, you know what? I'm not into this like at all.
Yeah, it's a lot.
I'll
of
just
stuff
buy them whatever I want to put on here.
A certain way. And for me, it was like, okay, the record's coming out, and so I've got to do this, and this, and then people can expect this, and this, and I just sort of didn't really want to do a lot of that this time. I didn't want to do a pre-release. We just put the whole record out. I didn't want to have any teasers. I didn't want to make it obvious that like, okay, it's going to come out in a year and a half from the next one, and then we're going to do a tour.
Yeah.
And there was all that stuff happening. So I talked to Chris Schlarb at the label. We're on Big Ego and the studio. We did that. And he was like, yeah, let's just put the whole thing out and you can put it out whenever you want. So I said, well, let's just do it a year after the tour, and maybe we won't do a tour for once, and we'll just put the album out and that'll be that. And I remember telling Watt about it, and he goes, yeah, that's cool, but maybe we should do something else in the fall, you know, just to change it up some more. We could, you know, I think his exact words were, what if you start a new band and I just happen to play bass in that band? And I said, you know what, Mike, that actually sounds like a really good idea.
Yeah.
And I said, I actually told him the only thing that I would want to do differently is if John Herndon would play with us. John and I've played together very little bit over the past. I think we've done like a couple of gigs. He sat in on the last MSSV gig we did in LA last year for a couple tunes with Hodges, so double drums. That was
fun.
Yeah,
awesome.
That was really fun. And he actually did the artwork for the previous MSSV record, On and On. That's his artwork on there.
Which is great. I love that artwork.
Yeah, so his artwork's amazing. And we had done a gig, we had done a couple of gigs in LA, and then actually when I first met him, the bass player, Devra Hoff, took me to to John's place, and I think maybe John had recently moved out there. This was like a long time ago, and I didn't. That was the first time I met him, and the three of us jammed in his garage. I think that was really fun.
I
probably said like three words the whole time.
But, yeah, the music through the talking, right? I mean, hey,
you know. And so, anyways, I told Watt, I was like, "Well, let me ask Herndon, because that would be that. I think that could be really fun and very different." To help not confuse people as much, you know.
It's so different, not only to, to both Keltner and Hodges, but, like, also different than what he does a lot of times, too. Like, as much as awesome as Tortoise is, like, you know, it's all different. And, like, that's exciting for everybody, because especially when you have musicians of your guys' caliber, right, you get to kind of work some different muscle groups, try some different stuff, and it has its own feel and its own vibe.
Yeah, I hope so. I don't really... We don't really know what the music is going to be yet still, but we are going to do a tour this fall. It's just West Coast, but it is all the way from Mexico to Canada and back, so it's not just U.S. It's a
proper West Coast, right?
Well, it's just people that say, like, we're doing a world tour, and they go to, like, three countries.
Yeah. Oh, we're touring Japan to play Tokyo and Osaka. I'm like, well, kind of. I mean, I guess technically you're playing Japan.
But anyway, so yeah, so John said yes, he'd be into trying it, and so I was really thankful to that for him saying yes to trying it, and we did a recording out in Pedro last December, I think, when I was out there playing with Joe Baez and some Ornette Coleman gigs. I wrote a song, a couple of little things, and we recorded it over at Casa Hanzo in Pedro, and that's going to be a 7-inch that's going to come out on Nomad Eel Records. Probably in late August or September, right before we start the tour on September 17th, I think it is.
Yeah, so really flooding the zone this year. There's a lot going on.
Well, it actually was born from the idea of, like, not wanting to flood anything. And then,
right, you end up going the other way.
And you're excited about it, and you start going, like, oh, I got to do this, I want to do that, I want to do that. And the whole point was to kind of maybe see what new music can pop out of this.
Right, and let the process.
Like MSSV, the music that I was putting together for that band and the way I was doing it, I was starting to feel like the fourth record that just came out, I feel like that was, I mean, I can always come up with something, but I felt like the trajectory I was on of putting that music together for those guys in that band, in the way we were doing it, I was kind of like, I don't know how much further I can take this without it becoming a totally different thing. And so I kind of thought, like, well, maybe it's time to just do a totally different thing for a minute and see what happens.
Right. And that's interesting because there's been alterations in the process that we've gone over in the past, like the whole thing of, you know, recording the record, you know, doing the long tour and trying the new material out and playing it live first and then recording it, so on and so on. And you know, that's process-oriented changes. As far as when the music is composed and recorded versus when it's learned, so on and so on. But yeah, there is a certain degree of, like, I mean, you're playing with, like, world-class players that have fantastic ideas on their own as well. So you don't need to take that burden entirely on yourself too.
Yeah. I want to do more of not taking it on myself.
It's a lot of work. As someone who does it also, like, I can tell you, it's a lot of work.
You know, because it's also booking the gigs. And
sometimes it's like, oh, my God, that's the why am I doing this sort of. And then you're like, I know why, but you still have that feeling of why am I doing this? And it's you don't need to be doing all that necessarily. So
no, but there is an aspect of, like, that you get to be responsible for everything that I do like. I do kind
I
of
like
owning the ability to make things happen, and that comes with the responsibility of being the person to be blamed when things don't
right.
go wrong. But I've always said that that's, like, how I learn best. So it's a good way to just keep me learning, you know, just to keep making mistakes.
you know, like how you know who says you only work for a bad boss once.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
No, and I think that that's interesting, and especially as, you know, MSSV has now been around long enough that, you know, that people have, if they pay attention and they care, through things we shouldn't assume, have a handle on what you guys do and, like, what that is. And you suggested and, you know, hooked it up with Hodges. I had a great time when he was on the show. And he's such a unique guy that I think a lot of people, maybe they heard the name, but they don't know all the stuff that guy has done.
Oh, yeah.
Because he's done so much stuff. It's crazy. I mean, I was just, you know, grilling about the film stuff for like 20 minutes, I feel like.
Oh, yeah.
But, like, I also feel like, you know, a band is alchemy, right? You're putting different elements together. And that can be exciting. So you're going to get that initial reaction, sure. But then it's like, what does this turn into? You know, what can we do that we can kind of lean into and do different stuff, and that's exciting as well. And I feel like there was definitely, you know, first to second record, you see some of that, you see some of that growth, you see some of those changes. And it's been really interesting seeing the growth of that as an entity, right? So then it's like, okay, well then you and Watt, great. And then, like, you know, Johnny Machine, also great. What's that gonna be? You know, different. But also the same, I'm sure. Like, you know, but it's exciting to have a different element put in place. And also just, I mean, it's hard not to just associate Herndon with Tortoise, because Tortoise has this wide swath of wonderful art on their own.
Yeah, totally.
That honestly, like, some of it's like, I'm like, wow, I have not paid enough attention to this era. Like, we were, I was driving with Dwayne to, I think our, I don't know, some show we were doing last year, some tour, and like he threw on like a recent-ish Tortoise record. I was ashamed to admit, I'm like, what the hell is this? This is badass. He's like, oh, it's Tortoise. I'm like, oh, really? I don't know this one. And that's great. As someone who loves seeking out new music, you know, it's great for people that can keep it interesting and keep it vital and keep themselves creatively aligned with it and pushing things forward, but also, again, have this like vitality to it that stays with it. So I'm stoked for you guys and for anyone that's going to see these proper West Coast shows. Again, not just stopping at San Diego and Seattle.
I think there's 24 of them, so there's ample opportunity up and down.
I love that, and I especially love that because it's like, you know, people in South America get real mad if you say like America too. We're America too. Goddamn, you know, like, they don't say goddamn it, but they get, and they have right to. It's like, well, you think about it. It's like, yeah, it is still in America. You know, the U.S. and like the USA has the best branding right now. But you know, it's like, oh, that's, it's
where
a proper West
about?
Coast tour. Folks in South America, when you say that, like, it's an American tour.
You did like a Southern American accent, and I was like,
yeah,
the South or actual South America.
So this is what happens when you catch me earlier, Mike. We get you get caffeinated, Conan. No one's looking for.
Actually, that. I really like that end of the Bad Bunny halftime show that like everybody was flipping out about.
Yeah,
like went through like America and named every country. I thought that was like in North America, Central America, South America. I thought that was really badass.
That was a really cool move, and that was a really cool moment for an event that I feel like doesn't have cultural cachet and. The world that I travel in that much.
Yeah, that was ironically. A solid, like,
that was like
20 seconds for me.
Well done. So, yeah, and you have a different way of operating for this. So with the Casa Sueno stuff, is it how much of this is like put together ahead of time? How much? What,
right now, what? Almost nothing is. Like I said, I don't really know what we're gonna do. We did a 7-inch, so I've got.
You got something.
It's like a long song that's on two sides, and one sort of more song than the other.
Yeah.
When it comes out. But so there's that. I asked Watt if he'd want to write a couple things, and he's kind of in an interesting place musically right now. He's been reading so many like jazz biographies the last several years, and he's gotten, you know, way into.
I drove him back to the airport, so I heard all about it.
You
heard
about the Dolphy books and everything.
Yeah.
Yeah, we were talking a lot of Dolphy the last few months, and so now he's kind of sending me little things that are sort of springboard pieces for different ways to improvise,
oh, cool.
but
all
as
right.
a band, and that kind of lend themselves to getting into something that could maybe be a song from the parts that are improvised together. I can't really say more than that, but. Because I don't know much more than that, but it's fun to try to piece it together, you know, through email like that with him, and then I can kind of lay some things down and go, is this kind of right? And the first one he sent back, he's like, no, that's not what I'm talking about at all. Think about it like this. And he said something about it, and I was like, oh yeah, that actually makes a lot of sense. And I kind of laid something else down, and so we got on some kind of wavelength with that stuff, and then you know, we can send it on to John, and he can. Take a listen and see what he thinks. And of course we'll try to get together and do some practice beforehand. And also I am writing some songs, actual songs for the band, but they're, the more I'm kind of ruminating on that, the more they're getting informed by the way that Watt's approaching sort of improv song type things. And that's kind of influencing the way that the songs I'm writing for the band are coming out. So it is actually really exciting because like you said, it's kind of, you know, you don't have to take everything on yourself. MSSV, I wrote the drum parts, I wrote the bass parts, I wrote everything, and I would send it out. And yeah, they would change on tour, of course, thank God, because my drum parts are kind of lame.
Oh yeah, dude,
sometimes, but
hard saying, where it's like, look, this is
the advantage of writing drum parts, not as a drummer, is that
I know
they don't sound like a drum parts.
and it used to be, I get goofed on. I'm like, hey, you know what, man? I'm doing the best I can with what I have. You got the idea, didn't you? All right.
Yeah. So I figured
that's the problem with working with world class drummers too, is that you're also dealing with someone who's like, all right, fine, I get what you're going with it. Yeah.
Yeah, and sometimes it would be really cool. It would take Hodges to a place he'd never been in before,
right,
and he'd deal with something and learn from that too, if he wanted to.
Sure.
But in this case, first of all, asking Watt if he wanted to write some things was a opening move to see what else we could get into that could be different, because he didn't really write any of the MSSV songs, although he did have a huge hand in coming up with really important changes to the bass parts, some of the music on the new album. He basically came up with a whole arrangement for one song. The very first album we did June 16th, you know, so... Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. I'm not saying anything like that, but having him actually like bring in songs like he did for the second Keltner record is really cool. And it's been informative for me in shaping like how this project could be different too.
Right, because it comes from a different place. I mean, because what is Break It Off, right? That's on the second Keltner record. Like, is that's a great tune. And it's definitely, it all fits very, like, it isn't jarring or anything along those lines. It all fits, sounds... That sounds like those guys, you know, just like the MSSV stuff sounds like those guys.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's got its own flavor, but.
Well, you have to play with who you're playing with.
Ideally.
Otherwise, it's like play along and you could be anybody, you know. Just
get some robots.
Like Chuck Berry, you just pick up your band in every town, which is cool for what that thing is. But I don't like, I'm in a place where I still want to get like musically intimate with people over a long period of time, you know.
I mean, we're you're playing with one of the all-time great bass players. Let him play bass, you know. Wild idea, right?
Or whatever.
Or whatever. Yeah.
But that's also another thing, you know, like people, you know, if you know somebody as a drummer or whatever, you know, people do all kinds of things, and it's really interesting to me to have people try to have a place where they can do other types of things, because it's about the person who's making the stuff. It's not like, oh, I need a drummer. It's about like, wow, I really love what you do on the drums. I'd probably love what you do on, you know, if you cooked something, you know what I mean? It's
sure.
Like the sensibility of a person carries through all these different elements of their life. And so even in a band, okay, yeah, I want to hear some drums, but maybe there's also something else. Like, yeah, I love hearing bass, but maybe there's something else too. I don't know. But why should it be so limited? I mean, look at like the Art Ensemble of Chicago. Those guys came out with like, you know, frying pans and stovetops and balloons and wine toys. It wasn't just trumpet, bass, and drums or whatever. You know, it was saxophone. It was like anything they wanted to put into it. And people have different takes on it, but I think it's a cool way to keep the humanity in it.
Well, you know, there's a lot of different ways to approach it. I mean, just like, you know, talking with Hodges about like the Tom Waits stuff, right? Of just like how his, you know, crazy brain is operating and bringing in I'm going to whack on this farm equipment for a while. You know,
right.
And it sounds amazing. You wouldn't
right.
want it any other way. But I think you're very right, too, that it's working different muscle groups, too. Because it's if you have a musician there, oh, they're known for doing this one thing. Maybe they want to do that thing here. They want to do something entirely different. And
right.
Maybe they're great at that, too, and there hasn't been a time or place for it to make sense to do it. So then that's exciting too, because then you have someone who's very skilled as a player, very excited about playing a certain type of thing, and it's going to be a big surprise for everybody, you know, maybe even the player to themselves. And that's wonderful. And I feel like that's, to me, like a lot of the spirit of that's more freely embraced by things like jazz and improvisation and what have you. And you don't see a whole lot of it in ostensibly quote unquote punk rock necessarily. So to have that applied in that way, hey, man, great.
Well, I think it depends what you're talking about. I think if people have an idea that punk is supposed to look a certain way and sound a certain way, then, yeah, you get the Ramones cover bands, you know. But, you know, there's also, like, just so much crazy, interesting music from that scene in the 70s of, like, bands people have never really heard of that are, man, there's this band Watt hit me to called Lemon Kittens that are, like, I've never heard anything like this. It's like a woman singing like in an operatic voice, and the I think her partner or husband or something is making all these sounds with all sorts of interesting percussion and toy pianos. And I don't know if people would consider them in the scene or whatever, but like, you know, I feel like the labeling thing. Well, you know, I have this whole thing going with post genre as my genre.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
But I think the labeling thing like really, really stifles the ability for people to be more creative than they think they can be in a certain way.
I think you're right. And I mean, from my perspective, that's like the record store mentality. Okay, which bin does this go into?
Is this post-rock
or jazz? Or
my favorite, my story about that, when I was living in East Hampton, Massachusetts for a few years before I moved to New York, like kind of for the second time, there was a record store that opened there. It's gone now, but it was a record called Night Owl Records, a record store. And I remember the first day they like just opened and I went in and it was a small shop, but like all around the walls was just bins full of records. And it was just like A, B, C.
Oh,
D,
just like all,
E.
This is alphabetical.
It was
alphabetical. I mean,
and I was like, oh my God, this is,
respect?
This is awesome. Yeah, this is awesome. And
Deep Purple and Miles Davis sitting right next to each other. Great. You
yeah,
know?
Yeah. It was like I'm way into that. And I think I kind of like said
along with the Dead Boys. That's a strong move. I appreciate that. You don't see that often.
Yeah. Like I was going to say, I asked them about it when I was checking out buying something. And I think they were like, oh, well, we just opened and we don't have the cards yet for the label.
So it wasn't even like an intentional thing.
I think I'm remembering that right. Yeah, because I remember being like kind of like, badass. Oh man, they're gonna
ruin it. It's gonna be like everything else. I think that there's folks that would be horrified by that, and folks that would be stoked about that. You know, I'd probably be more of the latter, right? But
I like all kinds of different things. So for me,
yeah,
it's
right.
You know how we are.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it's. It depends on what type of music fan you are, I suppose. But like, some of these, like, especially when you get into subgenres and stuff, it's like, what are we doing? What is this? Like, come on, we don't need to parse this. I get it. You know, if you're talking about like nomenclature, like, you know, for species and subspecies and genus and so on and so on. Like, well, okay, I guess you want to know if it's going to be, what kind of animal, if it's going to be on land or sea. Sure, but like you don't need to get into like, you know, the
what's more interesting to me is finding out like who somebody's influenced by, you know,
yeah,
just kind
the
of
diaspora
going,
sure
going through that thread.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Well, and exactly,
because it takes the style out of it, you know, like you can be influenced by Gustav Mahler and Fela Kuti and whatever, you know, and what's going to come out of that, wow, probably something pretty interesting.
Sure, absolutely. I mean, ideally. But you know, and that's also because people can be wrong about what they assume sometimes too. They can think something's coming from some places. Like, I wasn't thinking about that at all. I was thinking it just, you know, came back around that I guess it kind of sounds like that. But
yeah, and the reason I like that is because then I'll go and listen to it and say, oh, what was I missing that this guy heard that sounds
right? Exactly. And
so you get something out of it.
And sometimes you'd be like, wow, this is great. I didn't know that this existed, you know?
Yeah, there won't be any assumptions that way if it's just like specific points on the road, on the journey.
Yeah, that's wonderful. I love that kind of stuff. I think that's really cool. So tell me about, all right, so see you through. What was the the idea with the artwork here? Was this just like a, you set it up just like, hey, go. Or is it like, did you have an idea with it or something?
You mean the cover art?
Yeah, the cover art. Yeah.
Oh, well, See Through is the new MSSV record, the fourth record.
I should have mentioned that. Yes, correct.
Big Ego record. That's all right. Somebody's got to do it here.
Yeah.
And the cover art, I think I told Chris Schlarb at the label, my buddy, who, and I just was like, yeah, I don't really know. Not a picture of us. But maybe you'll have an interesting idea. He's gotten way into like film photography over the last few years.
Sure.
I felt like he probably needed a creative project at this particular point in time. So I was like, yeah, why don't you come up with something? I'm sure it'll be great. And I think I had some idea. I was like, yeah, I just want it to be really abstract and maybe kind of like psychedelic, you know, LSD trippy kind of thing. And so what he ended up with is the front cover, which is actually a combination of like when you go to the eye doctor, they take a picture of the inside of your eye.
Right. Yeah.
You've seen that? It's like
uh-huh,
a veins and stuff.
So, yeah, it looks like it's like, what universe is this from? It's like, no, that's your eye, bro.
Yeah, it's the inside of it's the inside of one of his eyes, and then he sort of paired it with images that the Hubble telescope had sent back recently. Those really like crazy detailed images that we were all sort of tripping over. So yeah, he definitely had that idea of like the internal and the external. A little too on the nose with the C part of the. Of the title, but that's okay.
Well, no, because it just, if you're
see like vision, not see like
C. S-E-A. Yeah. No, because it does like it has, like, I'm a big fan of space junk.
Sure.
You know, space stuff. That's it. Like the only thing I wanted to be when I was a kid was an astronaut. I couldn't do it because I didn't have the vision at the time, ironically. But you know, I think that works really well for the type of music, and you know, it's just it's cool on its own. But it does have that sort of, there's something kind of interesting about that. What is it? And then when you're like, it's an inside of an eye too. It's like, that's kind of cool, because then you think about the macroverse versus, you know, the universe and so on and so on. And you know, that's cool. It's thoughtful. It's thoughtful. Is what I'm saying.
Yeah, I think a lot of things in the way that I try to think about things over the past several years to varying degrees of success are like about how like the external things and nature is just a reflection of the internal thing.
Right. Yeah, absolutely. Well, and that's...
Everyone's turning this off. Right.
Well, what I was trying to turn off is these notifications for my email, which I keep trying to... And it's like, stop making noises when I'm broadcasting, damn it. So if I look distracted, it was because of that. Not because
like,
of
when I think... When I think when I think about people, like, have asked me, like, what's this song about or whatever, and I'm going to kind of... Oh, starting today, I'm going to stop answering those questions, by the way. But...
Because you want people to like just like what find their own meaning.
Well,
in it,
what I rather... love is the mystery of music, and I realize I do these interviews, and then people go like, "What's this song about?" And I tell them this long story, and I'm just like, "Well, that's lame," because now people aren't going to think about what they thought about, or they're going to go like, "Oh, I never thought it was about that. I really thought it was about this other thing, and now maybe I don't like it as much or something." But I always love the mystery in something, not knowing what something's about, not even knowing what somebody's saying sometimes, not even knowing what the words are, not knowing what something means, not knowing where it came from. That's what I love about creativity and music and artistic things. Honestly, that's what I love about like some science things too. Like, I don't know what causes something, but it's like genuinely amazing. And the mystery is like profoundly like shocking to me. But anyway, so when a lot of times people say, what's the song about? How do you write songs or whatever? My answer, very truthfully, has been like, I think of a song like it's like a mirror, like I'm making a mirror.
Yeah.
And I can pick the shape of the frame, and I can pick the color of the glass, and I can choose like sort of how it might reflect something in some ways. But it's the end of the day, someone else is going to be looking at the mirror, and I can't decide what they're going to see in it. So I think of all the songs I write as like little different mirrors of different shapes and different colors and things. But at the end of the day, I can't be responsible for what's inside of it to a certain degree.
These folks are going to see what they see. Sure. And it's a reflection of their own lived experience, their own where they're at when they're listening, which can change. Yeah, no, that's interesting. And it's funny how that works. I was on a show recently talking about Life on Mars, the David Bowie song, right? And during the course
of... What's that song about?
Well, exactly. Right. But by the way, inspired by My Way, the Frank Sinatra song, which I'm like, oh, wow, I would not have expected that. But there's a song that for literal years, like I've been listening to David Bowie since like 5 years old, right? I thought was, it's Lemons on Sale Again, like the fruit, and it's Lenin, like the political thought leader. I'm like,
right.
I found that out like last week. And I'm like, are you kidding me? Because I was like, oh, what a cool mundane thing to throw in this like fantastical. And I was like, oh, it's something totally different. I heard something, you know, not necessarily cooler, but completely different. And then I'm like, I kind of still like what I misheard better, you know? Like,
yeah.
And it's... I think there's got to be a fine line between the literalist translation of like, this is, you know, this is what it was intended when I created this, and like allowing the listener to have their experience and what they're bringing to us. So it's very interesting to me that you're very thoughtful about that, and that allowing that exchange of ideas that you're like, wow, that's not what I was thinking at all, but that's great.
Well, people get attracted to music so hard that they think of it as their own thing. Like if you love a record, you can think about it as like your own music. Like this music defines me, or, you know, I'm not saying you or me or whatever, but people will identify so strong with a sound of a band or a sound of a singer or whatever that they identify themselves with it, that actually, ironically, to the detriment of the field of musicians in a way, you know, people will get very sort of like upset if you try to not allow someone to own that thing, you know, like the streaming model is so like insane from a business perspective. But going back to asking people to pay a bunch of money for one record is like really hard now, you know,
because people have been trained for this renting of music,
you know. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. It's like, no, you don't have it now.
It's some kind of a Pandora's box thing. You're like, you can't really unring that bell in a certain way. So you have to find ways to just keep it appealing to people. I mean, not, you're not trying to find ways to keep it appealing, but trying to find ways to like have people still want to support the creation of this stuff, I guess is what
right.
I mean.
Because we now have had, you know, well over a decade of training people to think of music as it's something that you do not own, but you rent. And then by that same token, we have an entire generation coming up with, you know, it's not that it's being devalued. It's just the valuation of music itself is going to be different because there's less equity of like, I guess I'll buy this because the record cover looks cool. And like, let's see if it's any good. Like that level of discovery or finding discovery from other ways, like we did from zines and from thank yous and records and so on, what have you. But then you also have this idea of I don't know if you've seen this or not, but amongst younger folks, kind of going back technology throwbackness. Like, you know, they're making fundamentally an iPod, right? It's fundamentally an iPod, but it can hold like 2 terabytes of music. And so people are kind of like starting to go that route too, of like, we don't want all of this. We don't want all of music throughout all time. I want what I want to listen to, and I don't want to pay a monthly fee for it. And I would rather, you know, go through the process, which is really annoying for people that haven't continued to do it over the years, of buying this digital music, putting it on the thing, and then I have my thing that isn't trying to entice me into social media or like, you know, news alerts or what have you. I can just have a pure experience of listening to what I want to listen to without an algorithm. Is it the majority opinion? It is not. But that does exist. And I think that that's worth noting.
Yeah. I'm not like a Luddite by any means. Like there's all kinds of great stuff from technology. There's all kinds of like bad stuff from technology, but that's always been the case with everything, right? Mm-hmm. I think Watt said something once, it's like a knife. You can like butter your bread with a knife, or you can stab your friend with the knife.
That's about it, right?
And that's true. Yeah. You can do both of those things. But so, but there's also like a possible, like when you have everything available to you, a streaming service, which by the way, I like this one called Qobuz, Qobuz. I think they're cool. Yeah, they don't like they don't have like advertisements for ice on it, by the way.
Like, I hate that that's our metric now, right? It's you know, Jesus.
And they still have everything, and you can like pick like different what quality you want to listen to at if you want to get like profile-y about it.
Like, but anyways, hi-fi stuff.
Yeah, but so that it kind of is a cool opportunity for like self-awareness to like I shut off the autoplay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
and I don't want any algorithmic suggestions from it. Yeah. Yeah. And I still treat it. I mean, when I'm using it, when I'm listening to stuff through that platform, I'm still just picking an album and listening to the album. And then when it's done, I go on about my day or I go to the next album. And that's the way that I've grew up listening to music. First of all, so I'm familiar with that mostly, but also it's a good opportunity for me to like practice self-control in some way. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Of like, oh, I don't have to go to this and then go to this one and then listen to half of this song before I think about the other song and go to that one. And then before you know it, you're like scrolling reels on Instagram for 3.5 minutes or something.
Yeah, because it's a rabbit hole, right? It's like you're down the rabbit hole, you're hanging out the Mad Hatter suddenly. But I mean, and there's not to say that there isn't a good use case for it. I mean, on the Red Cross tour, we just decided arbitrarily to like let's just listen to all the Velvet Underground records. You know, that would be an interesting, because they're also different.
Through the whole thing.
You know, let's put them all. We got a long drive. Let's listen to all
We've
of them.
We've done that with Creedence in the Boat before, and it says V Tours. You could listen to all the records.
That's great. And then you get to those, you know, what's the one that, what the other guys are singing? Whatever. I can't remember that. That sounds garbage. What the one, but
the later tracks, the later Creedence tracks are like really trippy.
Yeah, I know.
I don't think I ever heard them before that, like how sort of like avant garde they get.
Some of them are like pretty, when those dudes are, we can write songs too. And it's like, okay, cool. Yeah. Go ahead. And then it's like, what is this record? Yeah. So like, it can be wonderful for things like that, like for exercises like that, for sure. But then it's also, a lot of times people will get analysis paralysis. This is intentional, by the way, when there's instant availability of everything. So they're like, well, I'll just, you know, whatever the walled garden in question wants to play for me, I'll listen to. That is also a tactic. Because then you become dependent upon the algorithm recommending things. I'm not talking about folks like, you know, yourself, myself, of course, the listeners of the show who are both incredibly attractive and intelligent and would never fall for such a thing. But that's the idea, is to turn people in, move towards that consumerist mindset of just like, well, here's what we're dishing out to you. Whereas for me, and I'm, you know, it's not luck because I worked at it, but I am a music filter. I am someone that year after year, people come back, hey, I found out about such and such band because, you know, they were on your show. They were on like, you know, whatever, put the record on the best of list, what have you. And I was like, great. That's literally why I do it. You know, so wonderful. The system works.
Yeah.
And there are other people that I feel that way about as well, where if I hear them crowing about something, I'm like, well, I guess I got to check that out, because if they're about it, then I'm going to be about it.
You trust the source.
So those human sources, those wildly inscrutable, sometimes erratic human sources, I think it's so important to value those voices and those people and take those recommendations rather than like whatever the algorithm, like, you know, again, whatever service they're trying to do. They're not trying to move forward art and better humanity. Sorry.
Yeah, that's basically true. But at the same time, I think I did get like an algorithmic suggestion once that was like awesome from a band I'd never
heard. Can happen. It can happen. But it's so not what it's there for. Kind
of like, well, nothing is inherently all good or inherently all bad. You know?
It absolutely. It's not that it's objectively evil. It's just that it's like what it is you're surrendering yourself to something that by its very nature is inscrutable in a way that is potentially malicious. And if you're someone that actually cares a lot about music, no guarantee. You know, some people don't. It's just like, I throw it on because I like it. All right, well, that's fine.
Yeah.
But if you're someone that really cares about, you know, the truth and beauty that art can provide, then you need to be thinking about these things. How you react to them is going to be your own business, but you should be thinking about them. Anyway, this is turning into a TED Talk yet again, as I have a tendency to do, but I feel very strongly about them.
Anyways.
So tell me about, exactly. Moving on. So you recorded this one. It was like a 70 show tour that you did.
Well, it was 69 right? shows all together with the U.S. leg. And then crazy. We did a bunch of shows in Ireland and the U.K.
Because I saw you on that tour, if I remember correctly. Oh, yeah. I think, it was at Davenport, I think, right? I can't remember.
Somewhere.
Anyway.
Somewhere.
Yeah, and you told me what you were doing. I was like, huh, that's a wild idea. That's really cool.
So we recorded it after the U.S. leg, which is pretty typical. And then it was like 52 shows. And then we made the record at Big Ego in Long Beach again. And then we had a couple weeks off. And then we did the shows in the U.K. and Ireland. And that was actually really interesting because it was still music from the record, the new record that we just made. But now we were playing them without sort of the specter of recording them at the end. But that actually didn't really change anything because we still changed stuff in the music that now was already recorded. So we could have made the record again at the end of that one and it would have been a little bit different, but we didn't. So it's just the way that band operates. Things keep changing and things keep evolving in the songs. And how can we make it better? How can we get the dynamics more happening? How can we change this? How can we keep this interesting? So it just keeps changing, you know, and we have a kind of a body of work. You could go back to the songs from the first couple of records and if we played them some more, we could record them and they'd be totally different. So I actually do have a bunch of live recordings kind of squirreled away here. Like actually like a lot, like dozens and dozens of live shows over the years, and there are some songs that kind of go through where you can listen to the differences in them that are kind of interesting to me.
It's like an evolution. Sure, because I mean, even seeing you guys play, I was like, oh, that's a little, they're kind of going off a little bit there.
Yeah, you've seen it enough that you can tell the difference from the beginning and the end. And there's always on these tours, there's always like the guys at the first show and the last show, because if you sort of start in SoCal, you can
do that. Yeah, you can that's be able really to see how it changed. Yeah.
Yeah, and they're always like, wow, it sounds so different now from the beginning, you know?
Because you discover new things about it in the process of playing it. You know?
Yeah, of course, and things that you want to kind of like investigate further. You know, that's why I always like making the record after you've played it a bunch. It doesn't have to be a whole tour, like, you know, 70 shows or whatever. But having played the material to kind of investigate it, where you're comfortable sort of laying, for me anyways, comfortable like committing it to like eternity, you know, kind of heavy, so...
Yeah, and I noticed, and I always, you know, I dig how you, like, it's not all uniform, too. Like, there's a more kind of, like, you know, frippy, sort of, like, Fahey kind of, like, guitar exploration, kind of, oh, that's, you know, that's so cool. And then there's a more, like, kind of concise, just like, oh, this is just, you know, you're...
There's only one guitar solo on this record on purpose.
I noticed that, and also longer. These songs are longer than, like, lengthwise. Like, there's more,
I got into a lot of drone-based music recently, and the idea of doing like a 3-hour drone piece didn't seem
I mean
realistic for
yeah that's this, a great experience at a at a show, but like on a record I don't know. Yeah,
but that idea of kind of having a concrete idea that sort of anchors a song down or an album or a piece or something became really attractive to me. Some of it is like harmonically like a drone, like the title track is See Through You, but the album's called See You Through. So the title track actually has like a harmonic drone kind of thing happening that gets broken up. So there are elements of that from things that I'd been listening to that I wanted to sort of see, well, what could MSSV do with some of these ideas?
Can I tell you that I noticed that, and
it's still not like full jam band, but
right without being jammed. Yeah, because I have a in my band the Art of Murder, the second record, is a drop C tuning, and multiple songs, at least half of them, have a octave with a skip, so you have that chiming ringing C out the entire time, kind of like a swampy sort of like, and I loved it so much. I was like, we can never do this again, another record, because it's like, otherwise it's like, hey, that's the thing that guy does, because it was so cool. But it was like, it's a crutch if you use it too much.
But I think about drone too, like not just harmonically, like a drone could be like a little repetitive sample.
Sure.
Like to me, that's a drone, or like a rhythmic idea that comes back and forth. That could be like a drone. It's just like sort of this idea that can anchor things like in a mantra way. It doesn't have to be super short and repetitive constant, but it's something that can be there.
It could be like a seatbelt alarm in a car, you know, whereas it's like, you know.
Yeah, or like gravity. Like that's always there for us. You know?
Sure. Yeah. No, and it's cool because it's exploring out in different ways than you guys have done before. And it definitely sounds... Well, it sounds like songs that you know very well, right? As opposed to being like, oh, this is, you know, hey, just wrote these, I guess. It sounds like this, which can be exciting to you in a different way. But this, you know, it hits a little different when you've had time to, discover what makes it cool or find certain things that maybe you weren't even thinking about in the first couple shows. And then be like, oh, this is, where is this? What's this all about?
Yeah. For me, that kind of music that was heading, we were kind of trying to head towards was a combination of these sort of drone ideas mixed with some ideas of improvisation that are based in the song that aren't like just total like free jazz freak out, but that have some kind of a thing that can come out of them and develop. And that's sort of where I was, my headspace was in too. And I have a feeling that the Casa Sueño music, though different, is kind of going to be a little bit more, very directly kind of coming from those sources rather than being hinted at a little bit. If anybody wanted to think about a preview of what it might sound
what that
like
might
before
be.
They get disappointed by well, actually
and I th-
hearing.
And I think of like, and I know it may sound hacky because anytime there's like guitar exploration, Neil Young has to be invoked. But like,
I love Neil Young.
But I mean, I love Neil Young. And that's a great example of like, you know, if you listen like some of the stuff that you know, the recorded version of like the single or whatever, and then like what he's doing live with it, it's like, whoa, you're flying off into, you know, past Pluto with some of this stuff. And you know, in that same way,
well, Coltrane too, you know, the
Coltrane too, absolutely, sure, absolutely,
versions, you know,
yeah, and that's it's interesting that I feel like we don't see that as much in the idiom or framework or whatever, like rock music is or what have you, that people are still like, whoa. And it's like, well, there's plenty of examples of people doing
well,
these kinds of things.
There's, you know, my theory for that. Okay. Yeah, there's
lay
that.
On me. Go ahead.
You have like the fusion thing.
Yeah.
And then you have the worst version of the jam band thing.
Right.
Which there,
yeah,
I think,
yeah,
there are
no,
versions of the jam band thing that
sure.
I
sure. There, there's
that. Like Derek there's, Trucks. Fantastic.
Yeah, right? there's you know, something good in
amazing
every genre.
Music,
right?
amazing players. But then there's like sort of like a bad stereotype jam band. Like I'm sure people could just imagine what it would sound like. But you don't. And then the fusion thing, like very like highly skilled and just like going bananas and like very impressive. But like after 10 minutes, you feel like you're getting hit over the head with a saxophone or something. And so for me, both of those things are kind of like the end of the spectrum where like, okay, I want to develop as a musician and I want to develop music in a certain way with a band or on my own, which I'm doing more solo shows and a solo tour this fall, actually also after the Casa Swing
right.
thing,
yeah.
But, which is also a secret, but
secrets revealed. Platonic.
But so for me, the line of like, how to develop as a musician, it has these like two things at the end of
yeah.
each path that I don't really want to go towards either one. And so I'm always trying to find ways to kind of navigate around that stuff, you know. And part of it has been like investigating dynamics or investigating like how little can I play or how long can you make a song go on and be interesting without a guitar solo as a guitarist, you know. What other type of things can you manipulate, or like what other elements can you bring in like as a composition sort of thing, more than just sort of like a jam section, which I don't get me wrong, there will be more jam sections in my life, but you know, how do you develop those things without becoming like bad jam band or fusion band? So
right, it's your own application
on my mind. It's,
yeah,
because it's a danger, you know, like I'm pretty good at guitar, that's just I'm not shining the badge up too much by saying that. And so it's like it's kind of a caution thing that I want to be really, really careful about, you know.
Well, it's almost like you know, using, you know, those oblique strategies or like, you know, the five obstructions
yeah.
in a film or something.
Yeah,
it's just
okay,
like, all
yeah,
right,
exactly.
Here's, you know, we're doing this now. Like this is
yeah. yeah. And a lot of it has to do with setting little rules, you know, like
yeah.
if you don't have any rules for like a song or like even just a little framework for an improvisation. Man, that can do so much from keeping it out of the gutter, you know.
Right, and a gig inclusive of analysis paralysis. I mean, it happens with composition too, where you're just like, well, I don't mm-hmm. know. If you have all options available, then like, you know,
yeah, why do anything?
Yeah, and so it can be
because nothing is still an option.
And so it can be more fruitful to limit those resources and be like, well, I'm only going to do, you know, this and this. Even if it's something you never share with another human being, then you can be like, oh, well, I know. Yeah, I know how to do that. Yeah, great. Rather than just like empty page, huh? You know.
Yeah.
And that's, yeah, that's interesting because that's a layer of creativity and composition that you don't. I was going to say, you don't hear about it in quote-unquote punk rock, but I think that, unfortunately, there's way too many barriers put up sometimes with some of these people. It's like, all right, we get it. You like the Ramones. Me too. You know? It's like, all right.
Yeah, but there's a lot of bands that have done so many interesting things.
For sure. Yeah.
I mean, you know, it's like...
Do you usually have them on the show? Yeah, I know all about it.
Yeah, and this is the 400 millionth episode you've
know,
done,
right?
So you know about it.
Yeah. But it's also it can be this the methodology of doing it, the process of doing it are almost as interesting as the results if you're the right kind of person.
Oh yeah, for sure.
I think it's cool, and I think it's cool like seeing what MSSV has kind of done and how it still sounds like you guys, but
for
it's,
sure.
but it's
yeah.
you're trying different stuff. And the thing, if you think about like your Kraftwerk, your Velvet Underground, like what have you. Like where it's like bands that like they try different things. I mean, I honestly probably listen to Loaded most out of all the Velvet Underground records, but that's because like, you know, all the more noisy stuff, that's like in my soul. Mm. So when I hear it, it's like, it's great, but like, I'm not throwing it on as much in that same way. And it can be kind of cool to explore that side of things. By the way, these are ideas I never would have thought about at 22 or something, you know?
Where yeah. Yeah. I mean, that's the luck of being able to live a long time is that you can kind of learn about things you didn't know about or think about things you wouldn't have had access to just because of not having lived long enough yet. Yeah.
And that's
a credit also to these guys that I get to play with, you know, to Watt especially, who's like been in a bunch of these projects now and learning things from Keltner and, you know, learning from what Hodges can bring to something and looking forward to more stuff I can learn from John and whoever else I get to play with in other different projects and stuff like that. Like, man, you just keep learning about different ways to do things and it keeps leading. It can lead people to different ways for them to do things in other situations. And it's just so cool to be able to be open to learning all that from different people and to have those guys who some of them are a little older than me, like they're still doing this. They're still open to learning through playing younger people or whoever, you know, and it's just like I've been lucky to have good role models in that situation.
Well, and it's come up with some great results for you, and I'm very excited. You know, the new MSSV is great, of course. See-throughs is the name of it, and I'm very excited. Whenever I don't think I'm going to see your full on West Coast tour of Casa Sueno because I live in the Midwest, but
you never know.
You never know. I do show up. I did the one time I saw you wasn't where I lived. So hey,
we're gonna announce the dates. I think next week or so, but it's through mid-September through mid-October. And then in November for about 2.5 weeks, I'm doing a solo tour with my friend, who's a great guitarist. We're doing kind of a co-solo tour starting from the South, going up through the Midwest. Actually, it's 2.5 weeks and we have one date open and we're looking for a Milwaukee gig.
All right, we'll talk. I'll get it together. Now that I'm post-Catawan, I can think about such things. But that's, yeah. That's I can.
No, if you're looking for something to do.
Yeah, exactly. I need that's yeah, exactly. I'm sitting around staring at the wall over here. Mike Vieta, it's such an honor to have you back as always.
Oh,
love
man,
what you do.
It's mine. I love talking to you, man.
I love all the stuff. I think this is a cool record. I think folks that like MSSV will find a lot to like here as well. And I think folks that maybe don't know what an MSSV is can check it out and like have a good time with it. So
and if they want to know more, they can go back and listen to a previous episode of Conan Dutron's Protonic Reversal. And
Library of Congress of weird music over here. safe travels as always. And I'm sure I'll see you at some point this year in person.
Back at you. I hope so.
Thanks, absolutely. Conan. Yeah. Take care, brother.
Bye.
There he goes, Mike Vieta. Let's hear the pseudo title track. It's not really a title track, but it's a close to a title track. See Through You. This is off of the record See You Through. I that just tickles me too much to not play that one. So here you go.
Ah!
There you go. Some MSSV, meaning steam stop valve for you. See Through You is the name of that tune off of the record See You Through. Big Ego. Big 037 is the catalog number for that. I think that's great. Big is the catalog, you know? So that's Mr. Mike Begetta. I'd like to thank you so much for coming back on the show. I always appreciate that guy. Please see some of the older episodes we went into as well. Fascinating character. Character. Player. You know what I mean. Anyway. Oh, mssv.bandcamp.com, too, by the way. Casasuedo coming at you as well. Stay tuned for that, Mr. Johnny Machine. This has been Code Neutron's Protonic Reversal. Thank you very much for listening to it. This show airs Thursdays, 8 Eastern, 7 Central, 6 Mountain, 5 Pacific, streaming live, YouTube and Twitch, podcasted later, everywhere for free. No ads, no sponsors, no kidding. And, of course, all those archives available at protonicreversal.com. Always. If you like the show and you want to get episodes just like this one sooner, patreon.com/protonicreversal. $1 a month for advanced access. We'll gladly achieve that goal. Helps keep the lights on up in this joint. Let's see what's coming up. Kira Rossler, Black Flag, coming up next. Very excited to talk to Kira. She has a new record. It's been many years since she's been on here. So very excited to talk to her and catch up, see what she's doing. She worked on Project Hail Mary. Which is my favorite movie of the year, I think, so far. We'll see. Code Neutron Secret Friends tour into June. Youngstown, Baltimore, New York. East Hampton, North Hampton, one of the Hamptons. And Boston. Check it out, neutronfriends.bandcamp.com. Stay safe out there.
Can you hear me now?
And I'll check you later.
Out on Route 128, dark and lonely. Got my radio on. Can you hear me now? Can you hear me now? Welcome to my top 10. I'd like to thank our sponsor. But we haven't got a sponsor. Not if you were the last man on earth. She was prepared to prove it. This one goes out to a special girl. But there is no special girl! It's the Xander Radio, the last announcer, plays the last record. The last what? Leaves the transmitter. Circles the globe in search of a listener. Can you hear me now? is it really broadcasting if there's no one there to receive? It's the end of radio. As we come to the close of our broadcast day. Radio.